It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. You're with us here on the Ideas Network. Coming up, we'll hear from a former UW men's basketball player who says it's time to start paying college athletes. First, it's time for our week in Washington. Yesterday was Election Day, and though odd-year elections have less going on than even-numbered years, both parties are looking for lessons in yesterday's results. Eyes were on Virginia and New Jersey in particular. They both elected governors and a lot of state lawmakers. Democrat Ralph Northam was elected governor of Virginia, and Phil Murphy, also a Democrat, won the race for governor in New Jersey. President Trump loomed large in both states and elsewhere. In his victory speech, Governor-elect Murphy in New Jersey made his stance on Trump clear.
We will stand firm for New Jersey's values and push back against the mean winds blowing at us from Washington, D.C. This is one of the first major elections since Donald Trump was elected. Tonight, New Jersey sent an unmistakable message to the entire nation. We are better than this.
Harry Enten is a senior political writer and analyst for 538.com. Harry, welcome back.
Thanks for having me back.
Well, since last year, around this time, Democrats have been looking for some unambiguously good news in election results. Did they finally find it last night?
I think they've come as close as they've gotten so far. I mean, these were huge wins for Democrats across the board. And while, you know, we're talking about the governor's races, as you mentioned, there were also down ballot races where they did very well, both Virginia, New Jersey, in a New York state, and even across the country in a Washington state where they took control of the state Senate there.
Yeah, that Virginia House of Delegates, I don't think that's on the national radar for most people, but I don't think anybody, Democrats included, expected them to do as well as they did in that set of down-ballot races. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, that body has been controlled by Republicans for a long while, and, you know, one of the people who writes for my website, 538, Dave Wasserman, who's a contributor there, and he knows Virginia better than anybody else, said that this would be safe GOP. There was no shot that the Democrats had to take control. And as of this hour, they are within a recount of taking control of that body. It's probably going to end up as a tied body or maybe Republicans with a one-seat advantage. But the idea that it was even close is something unforeseen just 24 hours ago.
Let's look at polling in that Virginia governor's race. It looked like a tight race. It ended up being not so tight. People had said running up like, polls were wrong. The error last time turned out to be underestimating Donald Trump. In a lot of cases, it's going to be the same thing. It's going to benefit Republicans this time. You don't buy that as a general rule.
I mean, boy, will we ever learn our lesson when it comes to this? I mean, polls are good for getting a good understanding when going into the election of what might happen. But keep in mind that there are margins of error, and those margins of error can go either way. It was just 5 years ago when Barack Obama, although he was forecasted to win by the polls, won by a wider-than-expected margin. That is, the polls underestimated Democrats. Then I heard in 2016 from Democrats, oh, the polls are underestimating Hillary Clinton. But in fact, it was just the opposite. And then this year, because the polls underestimated Donald Trump last year, I heard, oh, the polls are underestimating Ed Gillespie, the Republican candidate for governor in Virginia, when in fact they underestimated Ralph Northam, the Democratic candidate for governor. We just need to stop with trying to guess which way the polling errors are going to go. Polls are a good gauge for where the public is, and they don't, at least in the long run, tend to underestimate either side.
And Harry, a lot of people are going to try to draw lessons from yesterday, Republicans, Democrats, pundits, what have you. Before we get into potential lessons, do we put too much weight on the most recent election, whether it's 2008, 2010, 2016, or yesterday?
I mean, of course. I think we always try to gauge too much from any one or two elections that happened recently. And the fact of the matter is, over the long term, what we see is pretty much equal balance between Democrats and Republicans, right? George Bush was in there for two terms, then Barack Obama was in there for two terms, and now we have Donald Trump. The fact of the matter is that we're a 50-50 nation, and it just matters when exactly you land on the dial to see whether it's Democrats or Republicans in charge.
We're looking at the week's top national political news with Harry Enten from 538, focusing a lot on yesterday's election results. Harry, Donald Trump's lesson in a tweet, quoting here, "Ed Gillespie worked hard but did not embrace me or what I stand for. Don't forget Republicans won 4 out of 4 House seats. With the economy doing record numbers, we will continue to win even bigger than before." So the lesson is Ed Gillespie didn't hail to the Trump enough, and that's why he lost.
Yeah, I'm going to disagree with the president on this one, and I'll also point out that his statement's actually false insofar as that Democrats, in fact, won a special House race in California. Jimmy Gomez held on to that seat for Democrats, so in fact they were 4-for-5 at that point, although now they're 5-for-6 because a Republican won a special House race out in Utah. John Curtis held that seat for the Republicans. But overall, I would just say, you know, if you looked at how the results broke down in the state of Virginia, what you see is Ralph Northam basically capitalizing most in the areas in which Hillary Clinton outperformed Barack Obama just 4 years ago. That is that there was even more of an anti-Trump sentiment in the northern part of the state, where Trump's approval ratings are just basically in the gutter. And Ed Gillespie tried his best. I mean, Ed Gillespie is an establishment Republican who really, I don't think, felt comfortable tying himself to Trump, but certainly put many ads on the air that suggest that he and Trump were tied at the waist. And it just didn't work for him. If anything, I think this is a repudiation, at least in the state of Virginia, of the Trump brand.
And that's the key phrase there, at least in the state of Virginia. Are there lessons here for Republicans elsewhere in the country? Maybe a state like Wisconsin, with currently total Republican control of the governor's office and the legislature, looking at elections next year, about how they treat the whole Trump factor?
I think there are two different parts of this. Number one, we should point out that Virginia, demographically speaking, has a higher percentage of white voters with a college degree than almost any other state in the nation. It's very well educated in the northern part of the state, and obviously that is the group of people, whites with a college degree, among whom Trump does worse compared with prior Republicans. So we have to keep that in mind. That being said, we also saw Gillespie do a little bit worse in a lot of the areas that had high percentages of whites without a college degree, even if he didn't do, say, as poorly as in the areas with whites with a college degree. And more than that, when we look at elections across time, we really do see that the tide towards the Democratic Party is appearing in many different seats that have many different demographics, and not just in Virginia and not just in seats where there are a lot of white voters with a college degree.
And how about younger voters and minority voters and how they turned out?
Well, what we saw, at least, you know, it's a little difficult to tell in terms of age, but the exit polls do suggest that younger voters did turn out, even if not at the same levels as in presidential campaigns. But more than that, they overwhelmingly voted for Ralph Northam, the Democratic candidate. So it's not just necessarily about turnout. It's also how those people are casting their votes. And they went overwhelmingly for Ralph Northam, even more so than they went for Hillary Clinton just last year, and certainly more so than they went for the Democratic candidate Terry McAuliffe for governor 4 years ago in 2013. In terms of minority voters, black voter turnout did seem to be down, which is following a pattern that we've seen in other special elections this year, where the anti-Trump sentiment seems to be strongest among whites with a college degree, that part of the Democratic base, and not necessarily African-American voters.
Now, on the Democratic side, for lessons learned here, one thing people have pointed toward in those delegate races, Democrats ran a lot more candidates, contested a lot more Republican incumbents than they had in the past. Is the lesson you can't win if you don't play?
I think that's exactly the lesson. I think the lesson going into 2018, if you're a Democrat, is you've got to put up candidates everywhere. You never know where you might be able to take advantage of a weak incumbent, or for some reason an anti-Trump sentiment pops up. You need to run candidates all over the place, and that's just the lesson we saw in Virginia last night, and it's one we've seen throughout this year, where Democrats are mostly winning in those places where there are whites with a college degree, but sometimes, unexpectedly, they're winning in some places you wouldn't necessarily think that they would be able to.
Harry Enten's a senior political writer and analyst for 538. He's recapping the top stories in politics for our weekly look at national news. You can share your thoughts now at 800-642-1234. What do you think of these results yesterday? Is President Trump and his approval rating affecting elections so far? Do you think he's going to be a key factor in the midterm elections next year around the country here in Wisconsin? Do you see signs of a Democratic comeback or not? call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. Right now we're talking to Harry Enten, senior political writer and analyst at 538. We're looking at the top national news stories. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you think of yesterday's election results? Is there a Democratic wave coming? What do Democrats need to do in 2018 here in Wisconsin and elsewhere? What do Republicans need to do? Should candidates embrace Donald Trump or keep him at arm's length? Call in now at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Harry, before we move away from elections, Alabama is coming up next month, this special Senate election. People are wondering if there are lessons from Virginia, but Alabama isn't Virginia. What do you make of that?
Yeah, Alabama is certainly not Virginia. It's a state where the voting is much more racially polarized. And more than that, it's a state where Donald Trump is still relatively popular. It's a state where his approval rating is above his disapproval rating, which is the opposite of how it was in Virginia. And if you look at the governor's results, at least according to the exit polls, pretty much everyone who approved of Donald Trump's job voted for the Republican. Pretty much everyone who disapproved of Donald Trump's job voted for the Democrat in Virginia. If that pattern holds in Alabama, which it probably will for the most part, Republican Roy Moore is probably going to win that race over Democrat Doug Jones. But it's a relatively close race for Alabama. Probably is going to be 10 points or so if you believe the polling averages right now. But it looks for now, at least, that Republicans will hold on there.
And then looking ahead to 2018, Harry, you've written, a lot of people have noted that the opposite party from the president in these off-year elections tends to do pretty well. What, based on what we know now, knowing it's a year off, what are we looking at right now?
I think that we're certainly looking at Democrats doing very, very well in the midterms, at least in the House of Representatives. We're all 435 seats are up for grabs. They'll almost certainly, based upon historical patterns, receive more votes than the Republicans do. The question is whether or not those votes are allocated in the right seats to overcome the Republicans' natural advantage in terms of geographic sorting and gerrymandering in order to get to the 218 seats they need to take control. But right now, I think if you ask most experts, they'd say it is more likely than not that Democrats will take control, but we have a long way to go, and there's a lot of uncertainty around that estimate.
I want to move on to a couple other stories. We may check back in on election news, too. But Kentucky Senator Rand Paul attacked by a neighbor last Friday, worse than initially reported, 5 broken ribs, bruises to his lungs. You tweeted, Harry, that this should be a bigger story than it is. This, once upon a time, an assault on a U.S. senator would have been the top news in the country for a while. What do we know about this?
Well, this is a very weird story, and, you know, I'm afraid to get too far into, you know, what exactly happened. Given that we've gotten some conflicting news reports, most of the mainstream media believes or has argued that it was over a landscaping dispute with stuff around the properties. Remember, these two men were neighbors. He and a fellow doctor were neighbors. So it could have to do with landscaping, though it should be pointed out that there was a story that came out in the past few hours that suggested that Paul, in fact, was a model neighbor and really didn't have any landscaping problems. So it's unclear exactly why this neighbor attacked Rand Paul. Rand Paul didn't do anything wrong. He was there. He was getting off of his lawnmower. He had earbuds on, so he couldn't hear the guy coming. So Rand Paul did nothing wrong, but I think there's still some question as to what this guy's motivation exactly was, and I think that that's something that we'll be able to find out over the next weeks and months ahead as a criminal investigation takes place.
And on this idea that this has been crowded out by a lot of other stories, big stories, but this is something that maybe didn't get as much attention as it usually would.
I think, you know, one of the most interesting facets, or maybe disturbing, depending on your point of view, over the year of the Trump administration that has occurred so far is that normally stories that would sound almost insane get pretty much pushed to the back of the news because there's something else that's newsworthy. Now, that's partially, obviously, a reflection of our 24-hour news cycle, but I think it's also a reflection of the fact that, you know, the Trump administration or Donald Trump can tweet something out and push it completely to the back page, or there could be an election that comes up. But for me, this is a story that should at least get attention because obviously we don't want United States senators, no matter their party, getting attacked on their own property.
And then one of the stories, sadly, that did gain more attention was this the shooting at a church in Texas. A lot of details out about that, Harry, but I want to talk to you about polling on gun control issues after that shooting and before, for that matter. What do we know?
Well, you know, this is one of the issues whereby, you know, the public on individual gun control legislation pieces of issues such as background checks, universal background checks, are overwhelmingly in favor of those, including the vast majority of Republicans. But I've always been of the opinion that individual polling doesn't really get at what people necessarily think. They tend to follow their party when it comes to gun control. And Republicans at this point, no matter what tragedy seems to occur, don't seem that they want to put forward any pieces of legislation. Remember, there was talk about bump stocks after the Las Vegas massacre. Nothing really occurred on that, despite some Republican members of Congress saying that they wanted to move. So I am very hesitant to say that really anything will occur in Congress, despite perhaps what some of the initial reflections are from some of the different members in the House of Representatives of either party.
Talking to Harry Enten from 538.com, looking at the top national news. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you support wider background checks? What's your reaction to the elections yesterday? What does it mean for either party? 800-642-1234 is the number to call. I saw, and I can't remember where, Harry, something about in the exit polls in Virginia yesterday, looking at how important guns were as an issue for people. It was pretty important, but it looks like for people who guns were important to, check me if I had this wrong, they split evenly between the two candidates for governor in Virginia.
Yeah, I mean, this is one of the issues. Gun control has been a fascinating issue over a number of years, because normally I believe that the conventional wisdom is that gun control is more important to Republicans than it is to Democrats. But in the exit poll, as you pointed out, 49% among the 17% who said gun policy was the most important issue for their vote for governor, 49% voted for Ralph Northam, the Democrat, 49% voted for Ed Gillespie, the Republican. So it's split evenly. Now, maybe if they phrased it a little differently, we might have gotten, you know, a different answer. But the fact is that there are a lot of Democrats who want gun policy to change in this country. And I'm not necessarily sure, heading into the midterms, as Democrats already have a lot of momentum in other issues, that this is not an issue that tends to break more evenly than perhaps we're used to seeing.
And looking at the Democratic Party, since you brought that up, coming into the Virginia election in particular, it seems like in the last week, a lot of Democrats were getting ready to blame their governor candidate, Northam, for how he was going to lose yesterday. They're really gearing up for failure and this whole center moderate versus liberal Bernie Sanders wing split. Does that quiet down now after this election in Virginia?
I would think it should quiet down. I think that this is a problem that occurs in both parties. Whenever they lose an election, they're always afraid that they're going to lose the next election as well, and there's always intra-party fighting. If anything, right now, the Republican Party having all of its intra-party fighting, despite the fact that they had been winning elections, is the unusual thing that has occurred. But I do think that after winning this election, Ralph Northam has perhaps quieted down some of the anti-establishment forces within the Democratic Party, saying, hey, if only we had run further to the left, you know, we would have won. Ralph Northam was a pretty moderate guy in the state of Virginia, a guy who voted for George W. Bush twice. So I do think that this is the type of victory that establishment Democrats have been kind of looking for, to say to the base, hey, we've got this. We have everything under control. And so I think that this type of overwhelming victory, nearly by double digits, is exactly the type of thing that's going to do that.
And we're just a year out from that big presidential election last year, Harry. We had this revelation from Donna Brazile, as she was interim head of the DNC, talking about this funding arrangement between Hillary Clinton and the National Democratic Party. I think raising old wounds that a lot of Democrats didn't want to raise a week before yesterday's elections. What did you make of the fallout from that?
Yeah, well, I you know, it's very interesting because Donna Brazile is an old party hand. You know, she ran Al Gore's campaign in 2000. She obviously led the DNC last year after Debbie Wasserman Schultz stepped down under a cloud of, we'll say, scandal. But Donna Brazile has never, in my opinion, really been a big fan of the Clintons. You know, in 2008, it's pretty well known that she was behind Barack Obama in that primary over Hillary Clinton. And so, you know, I think that, you know, victory has, a million fathers, I think it is, while defeat is an orphan. and defeat always wants to get blamed at somebody else's feet. And I think that this is an example of that. I think that a lot of Democrats are probably just done with the Clintons and probably just done with Donna Brazile in general, and probably were not too happy over Brazile raising the issues that she did in that book. And I'm not quite sure exactly what she was trying to do, but at the end of the day, I think it's probably what people who are often trying to sell books do, and that is raise the press and raise the controversy so she can sell some books.
And Harry, we slice and dice demographics after elections, and it seems like there's always, you know, 1 year it was the soccer moms, 1 year it was the angry white males. After last year, it was the non-college educated white voters. Now people are looking at the suburban educated voters. Do we play too much into that? This is the one to focus on now.
I think we're always focusing too much on the new here and now group. You know, again, if you look at the results in the race in Virginia, the gubernatorial results, and you compare it to the vote last year, in fact, what we saw was a pretty much a straight lineup with how the votes occurred last year, except everything was shifted a little bit left. That is that Ralph Northam did a little bit better than Hillary Clinton in pretty much every county and independent city. So it wasn't just that, oh my God, Ralph Northam was able to drive up this huge vote in the North. Yes, that was true. But he also did a little bit better, say, than Hillary Clinton did in Lee County down in the southwest part of the state. So, you know, I do think that we try and drill too much down into this. The end of the day, what's most important is getting more votes than the other candidate. And usually it's a lot of different groups that drive that, not just one individual group, not just whites in the suburbs, not just whites without a college degree, as it was last year.
So we've got this Alabama Senate seat up, Harry. Are we done with special elections for a while apart for that?
Yeah, there'll be another. We'll obviously have some state legislative special elections that we always tally up in a sheet and keep an eye out on. And there'll also be a special House election in Pennsylvania coming up in the next few months. But really the focus here on out for the rest of the year is on Alabama. And that's going to be a fun race to watch because that's obviously a state that's very, very different than Virginia and gives us another little slice of understanding how Trump is playing with the American public.
We'll leave it there for now, Harry. Thanks, as always, for joining us.
Thank you.
That's Harry Enten. He's a senior political writer and analyst at 538.com. He joined us for a weekly look at the latest news in national politics.